The year 1895 dawned, and events were put in train that would change the history and face of Africa. British South Africa's conquests were consolidated under the new nation of Rhodesia, and almost immediately the predatory men who had brought it into existence attacked the Boer nation of the Transvaal, their neighbours to the south. It was a puny invasion under Dr. Star Jameson that was immediately dubbed the Jameson Raid. They had been promised support by their countrymen on the Witwatersrand goldfields, which never materialised, and the tiny band of aggressors capitulated to the Boers without firing a shot. However, the raid presaged the conflict between Boer and Britain that only a few years later would cost hundreds of thousands of lives before the Transvaal and its fabulously rich goldfields came under the sway of empire. In England, the Liberal Party of Gladstone and Lord Rosebery was ousted by a Conservative and Unionist administration under the Marquess of Salisbury. In opposition, they had always been vociferously opposed to Gladstone's Egyptian policies. Now they had a massive majority in the House of Commons and were in a position to change the direction of affairs in that crucial corner of the African continent. The nation still smarted from the humiliation of Khartoum and the murder of General Gordon. Books such as Slaves of the Mahdi had set the mood for exonerating Gordon of shame. In the New Egypt, which was now virtually a colony of Great Britain, the tool was at hand in the shape of the new Egyptian army, reorganised, trained and equipped as no army in Africa before. The man to lead it was already at its helm in the person of Horatio Herbert Kitchener. Great Britain contemplated the prospect of repossessing the Sudan with increasing pleasure and enthusiasm. By the beginning of 1896, Britain was ready to act. It needed only a spark to set off the conflagration. On the 2nd of March, at the Battle of Adowa, the Abyssinians inflicted a crushing defeat on Italy. Another European power had been thrashed by an African kingdom. This sent a clarion call to all colonial possessions. Almost immediately, the gloomy forebodings of rebellion were fulfilled. The dervish Caliphat Abdullahi threatened Kassala and raided Wadi Halfa. Reports reached Cairo of the gathering of a great dervish army in Omdurman. Added to this, the French made covert hostile moves towards British possessions in Africa, especially in southern Sudan. Thus, a number of concurrent events had cast Great Britain in the role of far-seeing saviour of the world from anarchy, the avenger of Khartoum and Gordon, the protector of the Egyptian state. The honour and pride of the empire must be preserved. The order went out from London to General Kitchener. He was to recapture the Sudan. He was to do it swiftly and, above all, cheaply. The attempts to rescue Gordon and destroy the Mahdi had cost Britain £13 million. Defeat is always more costly than victory. Kitchener was allowed a little over £1 million to succeed in the job that 13 years before had been botched. Kitchener summoned his senior officers and told them the momentous news. They were ecstatic. This was the culmination of years of grueling training and desert skirmishes, and the laurels were at last within their reach. "There will be more sweat and blisters than glory," the Sirdar cautioned them. Never one to seek popularity, he preferred to be feared rather than liked. "From the 22nd to the 16th parallel of north latitude, we are faced with waterless desert. We will go to capture the Nile, but we cannot use that river as a means of access. The cataracts stand in our way. The only route open to us is the railway we will build to carry us overland into battle. We can use the river only in the final stage of our advance." He regarded them with his cold, misanthropic stare. "There are no mountains to cross. The desert is level and good going. It will not be a matter so much of engineering technique as of hard work. We will not rely on private contractors. Our own engineers will do the job." "What about the Atbara River, sir? At its confluence with the Nile, it is almost 1,000 yards wide," said Colonel Sam Adams. "I have already called for tenders to supply the components for a bridge to be manufactured in sections that can be taken up on the railway trucks. Another call for tenders will soon be going out for the supply of steel-hulled river gunboats. They will be sent up by rail to the clear water above the Fifth Cataract. There they will be reassembled and launched." The Egyptian officer corps was immediately plunged into a hurly-burly of planning and action.